You are about to hear the sounds and voices that made history as President Eisenhower traveled through 11 countries and 3 continents. These events were reported by a corps of CBS News correspondents and technicians, over 100 of them who covered the trip for CBS Radio. Now, the President's Tour.
Peace and friendship in freedom. This, I think, is America's real message to the world.
That was the message of hope President Eisenhower brought to the people of 11 countries when he made his unprecedented tour of 3 continents. Millions of people saw and heard the president, and the result was electric. He was to them a symbol of hope and freedom, and they opened their hearts to him. The trip was unmatched in American history. Never before had a president traveled so far, and never before had there been such an outpouring of people to cheer him. And for Dwight David Eisenhower, it was the fulfillment of a lifelong ambition, a visit to India and the Asian subcontinent. The journey began with a visit to our ally, the Italians. When the presidential jet set down at the Rome airport, the skies were dark and rain chilled those who had come to greet him. But President Eisenhower held out a promise that through NATO, this country stood side by side with the Italians.
I assure you that as partners with you in this NATO organization, we shall always do our part and stand with you in the search for peace, with justice, and in freedom.
The president took advantage of the Rome visit to pay his respects to Pope John the 23rd, the first time an American president visited the Vatican since Woodrow Wilson. From Rome, President Eisenhower flew to Ankara, where Turkish President Bayar heard a smiling American chief of state try to speak Turkish.
I am delighted to be here once again among my Turkish friends, and I know that I speak for all the members of my party when I respond to your warm words of welcome by saying, somewhat haltingly, I fear, but nevertheless sincerely, Hoş bulduk. Choked, teşekkür ederim.
The strongly pro-Western Turks had gone all out to welcome the president. They lined the road into Ankara from the airport with huge arches, flags, and decorations. Several hundred thousand people cheered as he drove past, escorted by the colorfully costumed Janissary band, court musicians from the days of the Sultans. Turks, who share a long, heavily armed border with the Russians, were happy to have President Eisenhower visit them. They welcomed the assurances of the president that the United States would not be sweet-talked by the Russians into lowering our guard.
Our two countries have been friends for a long time. I think that they have been growing all a stronger and firmer friends every year, every month, every day. I am confident that this will continue to be so. We stand together on the major issues of the world that divide the world. We see together, and I can see no reason whatsoever where we shouldn't be two of the sturdiest partners always, standing together for security, for freedom and liberty, and for pursuit of peace.
From Ankara, Eisenhower was off to Karachi, where he was greeted warmly by Pakistan's dynamic new president, General Ayub Khan.
I welcome you most heartily to Pakistan. My country has been looking forward to receive you joyously because, more than anybody else in this age, you symbolize in your person a dynamic manifestation and working of the principles of universal peace, freedom, and goodwill.
This was the president's first stop on Asian soil. On the drive into Karachi from the airport, the road was lined with thousands of Pakistanis. But the president could not help but see beyond the cheering people that poverty and disease were everywhere. He gave Ayub Khan a sympathetic ear when the two men talked privately about increased economic and military aid. They also touched on the sensitive Kashmir issue, which has caused some bitter exchanges between Pakistan and India. After the private talks, Ayub Khan was host to President Eisenhower at a lavish banquet. The president watched fascinated while musicians and dancers gave a performance of the traditional Pakistani dances. It was a brilliant display of grace and color, and it set the stage for the gigantic civic rally held the next day in the center of Karachi. The presidential party arrived at the rally as a mullah called the people to prayer.
تبارك الذي جعل في السماء بروجا.
Half a million wildly cheering Pakistanis jammed into the square to see and hear the American president. Their reception was so enthusiastic, the president had a hard time finishing his speech.
It is a high honor indeed, and a personal privilege for me to be a part of this great gathering in your city. And this meeting gives to me an opportunity that I have sought every moment since I first arrived at the outskirts of Karachi. I have never received in the world a warmer, more hospitable a greeting than was given to me by the throngs in Karachi.
अच्छा भाई अब जरा तुम बातें सुनो ना अब जरा चुप करके बातें सुनिए आप
शुक्रिया For this greeting, ladies and gentlemen, I am profoundly grateful. And I assure you, my party, those attending me, feel exactly the same way. And indeed, I am sure the people of America will understand that you are trying, through me, to say to them that you are their friend.
From Karachi, President Eisenhower flew into the backward and mountainous country of Afghanistan. Here, the president received a shock as he stood at attention at the Kabul airport while the band played the Star Spangled Banner. A squadron of planes roared overhead. They were Russian-built MiGs. Afghanistan is receiving large-scale Russian aid. The airport at Kabul is Russian-built, and even the highway into the city was paved by the Russians. But the president's welcome was warm. And at a pleasant, if exotic, luncheon, he exchanged toasts with King Mohammed Zahir.
Although geographically our two countries are thousands of miles apart, the gap of physical distances between us is spanned by our common respect for certain principles upon which your country has been built. The people of Afghanistan identify your country and your people in the light of these principles. Readiness to fight for liberty, cherishing one's own freedom and respecting the independence of others are traits which we feel we have in common with the American people. To us, our liberty and defense of freedom have always been a primordial issue. Our people therefore feel as though they have a common tradition with all those nations who respect the supremacy of these principles. During the years foregone, the innate energies of our people had to be entirely devoted to the cause of safeguarding our national freedom. Today, as in the past, our independence remains our foremost concern, and our current efforts for reconstruction of our country and for improvement of the standard of living of our people revolve around that point. Gentlemen, I propose a toast to the health of our distinguished guest, General Eisenhower, the President of the United States of America, to the success of his worthy endeavors for the cause of world peace, and to friendship between Afghanistan and the United States of America.
Your Majesty, Your Royal Highnesses, and gentlemen. First of all, Your Majesty, I should like to thank you very sincerely for the graciousness and generosity of your remarks concerning my country and me personally. The peoples of America and Afghanistan share a steadfast determination to protect and defend their independence and heritage. Because we respect your independence as we do our own, we participate with you in mutual security measures. We Americans are proud of your advances on the path of economic, educational, and social progress. We are happy that we have been able to assist you even in a small way. And so I propose a toast to the King. May he continue to enjoy good health and well-being and the benign guidance of the Almighty. And to the people of Afghanistan, may they never falter in their steadfast determination to maintain their honor and independence. May they march ever forward in peace, progress, and prosperity.
From Afghanistan, the president flew to India, arriving in New Delhi just before dusk. There he was met by the largest crowd he ever saw. An estimated million people had waited for hours to get a look at the American president. That first night, Prime Minister Nehru and Indian President Prasad treated Mr. Eisenhower and his party to a dance and music recital at the presidential palace. The president's 4 days in India were busy, crowded days. He spoke to the Indian Parliament, visited a model village and the Taj Mahal, and he opened the American exhibit at the Indian World Agricultural Fair.
I hope you will indulge me as I suggest some thoughts of how food can help all of us achieve better lives in a world of justice and peace. Today we have the scientific capacity to abolish from the world at least this one evil. We can eliminate the hunger that emaciates the bodies of children, that scars the souls of their present parents, that stirs the passions of those who toil endlessly and earn only scraps. Men, right now, possess the knowledge and the resources for a successful worldwide war against hunger, the sort of war that dignifies and exalts human beings. The exhibits, the different exhibits in this whole fair are clear proof of that statement. The call to that genuinely noble war is enunciated in the theme of the American exhibit. That theme is food, family, friendship, freedom. Into these four words are compressed the daily needs, the high purposes, the deep feelings, the ageless aspirations that unite Indians and Americans under one banner, the banner of human dignity. Here are four words that are mightier than arms and bombs, mightier than machines and money, mightier than any empire that ruled the past or threatens the future.
When the president left India, he recorded a speech for broadcast over the All India Radio, in which he detailed the bonds which tie India to the United States.
India has filled these past 5 days of my life with so much excitement and wonder that I shall never forget them. Some similarities between our two countries have become clear to me. India and America believe in the dignity of the individual, in each one's right to live his life in his own way. We both believe in equality of opportunity. We both believe in the right of minorities to have their opinions respected and protected. We both believe in the rule of law in world affairs and in the peaceful settlement of international disputes, be they great or small. The These are indeed fundamental bonds between us.
On his way back from India, the president landed in Iran, where his speech to the Iranian parliament, a pledge of friendship, may have helped prop the Shah's shaky regime.
My conversation this morning with His Imperial Majesty, this convocation, my knowledge of the state of relations between our two countries, and indeed the unusual warmth of the reception that I received upon the streets of your beautiful city, have all been heartening assurances that we, our two countries, stand side by side. This visit reinforces my conviction that we stand together. We see eye to eye when it comes to the fundamentals which govern the relations between men and between nations.
To the Greek parliament the next day, the president again pounded home his message of peace.
The Greek and American people share a common and deep devotion to peace. I mean peace that is creative, dynamic, fostering a world climate that will relieve men and their governments of the intolerable burden of armaments, liberate from the haunting fear of global war and universal death.
From Greece, the president boarded the cruiser Des Moines to sail the length of the Mediterranean. A brief stop in Tunis for a breakfast chat with Tunisian President Bourguiba, and then on to France and the meeting of the Western Big Four. That historic Paris meeting decided to call for an East-West summit conference in the spring, a face-to-face session with Russian Premier Khrushchev. The prospects of reaching an agreement with the Russians at 1960 summit conference are still not good. The Soviets will be out to make propaganda. But President Eisenhower's 11-nation tour has created a vast reservoir of goodwill on which the West can rely when they sit down to negotiate with the Russians.